It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosie.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosie.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosie. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. And every now and then, friends, this show turns into stage sociology because I promote plays on the show. It happens. And with that in mind, I have two guests in studio there. You guys are new to – is this your first shows at IRT or one of your first shows?
My first show.
And this is my second show.
Yeah. So I think the veterans in your show, they've done this show before, and I think they've thrown you into this one. So welcome to the Terror Dome.
Yay.
Anyway, the voices you hear are Aaron Kirby and Sophia Macias, who are Romeo and Juliet – guess in IRT's production of Romeo and Juliet, which opens this weekend, and they took some time out from dying. Spoiler alert on a Shakespeare play, and it's running through March 3rd at IRT. So go to irtlive.com to see. Well, some would call it Shakespeare's greatest romance. Some would say Shakespeare's analogy on bad parenting. Hi, kids. How you doing?
Hi, doing well.
We appreciate you taking the time because it's a busy weekend for you guys.
Thank you for having us. It's a treat.
Cool. All right. So we will get with them in a little bit. But first, I want to talk about what's new in theaters. Not a lot this weekend, not just because of R&J, but it's also Super Bowl weekend. So, yes, you arts and sports can live together. So I'll be intrigued to see how the Sunday matinee goes. And it's an alternative. And also the fact that the Oscar-contending films are still out there and there's plenty to choose from. Have you guys been able to catch up? I mean, you've been busy, you know, doing Verona stuff. Have you been able to watch
it? Sure. That's one of the best things about being a part of SAG-AFTRA is all the wonderful screeners that you get to check out at home.
And how many people bother you about those screeners?
You know,
too many.
I'm a good little child, so I, you know, I mind my P's and Q's.
Yeah, I bet you. Don't worry about him. He's all right. All right, cool. So with that in mind, there is one film opening this weekend, a new one, because sometimes the studio's got to put stuff out there. And it's the horror, not really horror, the haunted house movie Winchester, which is directed by the Spierig brothers, if I remember correctly. They recently did the film Jigsaw, which just came out on video last week. That came out last year. They also did Daybreakers and Predestination. It's a scary movie starring Helen Mirren and Jason Clarke. Well, and Helen Mirren, I guess, well, she can do anything she wants, really.
She absolutely
can.
If she can appear in a cameo in a Fast and Furious movie, why not a horror film? Get to that audience she hasn't tapped into just yet.
And she had to ask her way into that movie, and they
Fast
said,
and
yeah.
Furious?
Yeah, come on in, Helen.
She knocked on the door with her award.
Basically.
Here
any,
I am.
Any of you guys have this? Yeah, let me have a scene. So,
I'm Helen Mirren.
Exactly. So in this, and this... Okay, ladies and gentlemen, when something says it's inspired by a true story, nobody cares. Every other film is based on a true story. And apparently this is San Francisco's most haunted house. It involves the Winchester family, the people who make the rifles. Jason Clark plays a surveyor of mental health, and he has to go and check out Dame Helen and see if her mental capacity is able to run the Winchester Empire. There's an odd thing of the house is being constantly remodeled and revitalized and added upon 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in the 1900s. And apparently the house is cursed.
Oh, no.
I know. And, you know, bad things happen on that.
Now,
I will say this. It is, if you are not a fan of splatter, torture porn, what have you, or Jigsaw, you don't have to worry. That's none of this. I wound up seeing this Friday morning at 10:30 a.m. with two other guys, or, you know, an affectionate group, the old, the unemployed, and the weird, because who else is at a multiplex that early on a Friday? And this is one of those ones probably would have been better with a Thursday night crowd or a Friday night crowd. Mm-hmm. There, you know, Helen Mirren's fine. Jason Clark is fine. And it helps that you have a couple of, like, real name actors not doing, you know, not half dressed teenagers doing half dressed teenager stuff.
Right.
Stuff that I grew up on. Hopefully, well, you saw Scream and the revitalization of those. But get off my lawn. But the problem is if you've seen enough of these, you know what's coming, and, you know, it may make maybe a more vulnerable person is able to jump and have those jump moments, and it didn't quite do it for me.
Were you too guarded the whole time?
I am, because I'm old and haggard. Well, when you open a door, when opening a door takes 3 minutes,
they do set you up. For
they
that
do set a little long in the tooth.
I can't handle stuff popping out at me. I just
so
I,
you. Wow.
I don't have the disposition for it.
So, but would you see this with the presence of Helen Mirren and Jason Clark?
I don't know.
Come on.
I know you're going. Helen. I know you're up to your knees in SAG stuff and Shakespeare, but.
Well, you know, if she makes a specific request of me, I'll be happy to do it, you know?
Yeah, she never returns my calls either.
Oh,
so
no,
yeah.
Helen, why?
Wait up, buddy boy. All right, no. So anyway, I'm you know, if you're again, if it's a grown up, not adult, that's a different movie. If you like grown up scary movies, there's worse out there. It's just, you know, decent performances. It looks cool, but it, you know, didn't do a whole lot for me. So that's unfortunate, but that's life. That is opening in theaters there. If you are now, this show airs three times: Saturdays, Sundays, and Mondays. So this all depends on when you're listening to this. If you are not hightailing it down to IRT for the first afternoon performance, Saturday, February 3rd at 3 p.m. at IU Cinema down in Bloomington, the original 1951, The Day the Earth Stood Still. You sci-fi fans there, at 7 o'clock. From the Ukraine in 1965, Shadows of Forgotten Ancestors. Sunday, February 4th at 3 p.m., the 2012 drama As One. On Sunday the 4th at 6:30 p.m. from 1998, Sophia, you will have to study the script eventually. Dancing at Lunasa, because it's female and, you know, and it's Irish. So check that out. Monday, it's a good script. It's a good play. Monday, February 5th, Port Triumph, from the documentary from this year. Thursday, February 8th, a lecture from Jay Haberman at 5 p.m., as well as the International Art House series, the Wounded Galaxy series, a double feature, the original Night of the Living Dead, along with America from 1969. Friday, February 9th, Uptight and Black Panthers, the blaxploitation drama, as well as the Black Panthers documentary on Friday, February 9th. Score by Booker T and the MGs, great album. Saturday, February 10th, the Wounded Galaxies 1968 series, Invocation of My Demon Brother from 1969, and Le Chenoise, pardon my whatever, at 7 o'clock. That is all happening down there. And Sunday, February 11th, I have to mention this. I can't believe they're showing this. From the 1968 series, at 6:30 p.m., Sunday, February 11th, Otto Preminger's Skidoo. Hailed as one of the worst films ever made.
Uh-oh.
With Jackie Gleason, Carol Channing, and at that time, half the Screen Actors Guild. And it's Jackie Gleason plays a mobster who is thrown in jail and winds up experimenting with LSD.
Uh-oh.
Right. And Carol Channing?
Carol Channing's in it. Carol Channing sings the title track, and this is a film that's one of those, because it's Carol Channing and Jackie Gleason, I think a young Austin Pendleton's in it.
Oh.
I think half the Batman villains are in it. But it's one of those, it's kind of a big budget poking of the counterculture. So apparently if you know somebody like Jackie Gleason takes LSD, you know, there's a lot of vibrant laughing colors and you turn really, really, really small with the psychedelic sitar rock music.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, right. So anyway, I actually own this film on Blu-ray. I inflict this upon friends.
What are the extras on that DVD?
There's an Otto Preminger box set that I have, and it's three of his not so best films, but you know, suckers like me bought it. So
and share it with your friends.
There's that. Anyway, that's happening all at IU Cinema at the Historic Art Craft Theater. Mark your calendars, February 9th and 10th. So next Friday and Saturday at 2 and 7:30 p.m. at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh, classic.
Yes. Now, you are actors of a certain age, so I will bring this up. Where did you guys go to school?
I attended Oklahoma City University for a degree in music theater.
Okay.
And I went to TCU in Fort Worth, Texas, just west of Dallas for my undergrad, and then did grad school at Wayne State University in Detroit.
I grew up in Flint.
Oh, my gosh.
You got out. That's good.
I did get out.
Okay. Anyway, so I talk about this with certain generations. I'm a Ball State grad from the 90s, but there were certain staples of dorm wall art. And I'm gonna test
right.
The two of you on this, because my old film show producer Kobe and I talked about this. So for the guys, possibly a Pot Leaf or Jimi Hendrix or Bob Marley, a beer poster of some kind, probably with some woman in a bikini or some. Even if you don't like the beer, you kind of like the model more than the beer itself. You know, why do you have a Miller High Life thing? Because there's a bikini on
the lady,
right? The lady, you know, whatever. So, you know, you got that from the store. Let's see. And, you know, if you're on the sports side, you know, there's some the athletes that
right.
you admire. For guys, Reservoir Dogs or Pulp Fiction or Fight Club or Boondock Saints, you know, real guy.
But how can you not? Those are all such great.
Except for Boondock Saints.
Well,
Fear and Loathing.
Well, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, very good. I remember my freshman year, 1988, I had Annie Hall. Because I was that guy.
Oh.
So, and of course, yeah, the theater kids, yeah, Sondheim and Fosse.
Yes,
and
right.
Now, for the ladies, a black and white photo of either Paris or New York.
That hasn't gone out of style.
Laughing
means
yes. a quote from either a world peace leader or an author.
Accurate, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
What was yours?
I either had something Shakespeare or
Shakespeare as well.
I had much more poetry or people that did speak on peace or love. I have Charles Bukowski as well.
Of course, good. Let's see. An inspirational quote of some kind. Mm-hmm. Breakfast at Tiffany's. This is why I brought this up. Breakfast at Tiffany's, Dirty Dancing, or The Notebook.
The Notebook is my favorite. I didn't have any posters, but I do love The Notebook.
There is that. And then on the back of the door that only you could see, Ryan Gosling, Channing Tatum, or Shirtless Firefighter.
You know, that's a miss. I didn't have any of those.
I stand corrected. But I hit one. That's not bad. But you get that idea.
Right.
Yes, for sure. Very much in the zeitgeist still.
Because I remember in the student center, they would have the big giant poster sales because they want you to fill the walls and you know, take $100 out of your parents' money for decorations.
Right.
So, and we haven't framed that. We can't afford frames yet. That's what pushpins are for.
Right.
All right. So, yes, Breakfast at Tiffany's happening at an Art Craft Theater. We already mentioned Winchester. Okay. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Aaron and Sophia from Romeo and Juliet at IRT are hanging out with me. They run through March. They resurrect and come back through March 3rd. And we will get to them in a little bit. There's a couple of Blu-ray titles I want to talk about. And then we're going to catch up on some videos that was recent that were recently sent to me. And then we'll talk about Romeo and Juliet and the Barden Cinema and their film having habits and all that. So, new on Blu-ray this week. Again, not a lot. There's three films that need a wider audience. And I'm hoping now that it has a video release that will happen. If you are a fan of Patty Jenkins' film Wonder Woman, and who isn't, don't know if you could have this as a double feature, just not with the kids around. It's Professor Marston and the Wonder Women. This is the other Wonder Woman film. It's not a three-way bondage film, but there's moments. There's implied. Okay, that's not really implied. It happens, but it's Luke Evans. That's the other thing. You have Luke Evans. So, gang, it's not kids. It's not Gaston, but it's a different thing. So it's Luke Evans, Rebecca Hall, and Bella Heathcote, and it's based on the author, the creator of the Wonder Woman comic, and his wife, and a third party.
And friends.
And friends. And how, because especially when the comic first came out, as Terry Gross has talked about ad nauseum on Fresh Air, there's a lot of bondage and torture elements into the Wonder Woman comics. Just trust me on this. Anyway, life imitates art. So anyway,
Indeed.
First impression. How you doing? I will say this, not a first date film. Just that either. So anyway, but it's a good complimentary piece. It's a darker piece.
Yeah, I don't know. It would give the right signal on a first date.
Nah.
Or.
And you don't say that's us in 2 hours.
Right.
No, I'm kidding. She knows I'm kidding, folks. Written and directed by Angela Robinson. The other film that kind of got lost in the shuffle of the Academy Awards, and this was a film that made my top 10. It's Richard Linklater's Last Flag Flying with Steve Carell, Lawrence Fishburne, and Bryan Cranston. Carell plays, they're all veterans from Vietnam who reunite, and they're going to bury Carell's son who was killed in combat, but they have to travel to Washington, D.C., and these are guys he hadn't seen in a couple of decades before this road trip. If you're familiar with the Hal Ashby film, The Last Detail, the wonderfully profanity-laced film with Jack Nicholson of naval shore patrolmen taking a prisoner to the brig. It's kind of it is a road trip feel. It's also a reunion picture, but three really really nice performances from Cranston, Fishburne, and Carell.
Sounds fantastic.
And it's hard to go wrong with those actors,
right? And Richard Linklater proves once again he can make any film he wants. So to go from Boyhood and Everybody Wants Some and the Before series to making something like this. Really solid. Wow. And then a film that is up for Best Animated Feature. They had a screening of it here last week. The IFJA, the Indiana Film Journalists Association, of which I'm a part of, gave this film the Original Vision Award as well as runner-up for Best Animated Film. The film Loving Vincent, which is a story of a gentleman trying to find finding out the last few days of the life of Vincent Van Gogh.
Yes,
so it's on paper, it sounds like masterpiece theater, kind of costume drama of searching and finding puzzles, but the film was hand painted.
I saw a couple of videos and articles written on that, and I mean it took so many artists so much time and so much effort to. The entire film was hand-painted and in the same likeness that Van Gogh painted his paintings.
In the style of.
Wow.
It's beautiful of what I've seen of it
thus
far.
This is a much better first date film.
Yeah, this would absolutely send the right signals.
Especially if you're
way.
In the colors and the visuals. And then you can
romantic.
And then you can listen to the Allman Brothers afterwards. Those who know what I'm saying know what I mean. Those are out on Blu-ray. Go check out those three if possible. Catching up, because I also had award screeners like you. First world problems. So I've been catching up on films that have been mailed to me, I've been sent, and sometimes you just kind of go to what's at the top of the pile. The Film Movement company has the 2017 documentary Architects of Denial, a gut punch of a film about the history and of persecution of Armenians by the Turkish government and by Turkey itself, going all the way back to the 1915 genocide. And, of course, the problem is Turkey has a lot of business relations with the United States, and there's an uncomfortable moment several times of U.S. politicians who are on committees with relations with Turkey, and they can't even say the word genocide, yet alone acknowledge that it actually happened and was still happening. Our interview footage includes two survivors of the 1915 genocide and what's been happening since. So, you know, if you don't have enough ammunition about how the last year or so has been, Architects of Denial is one that you can add to the...
Yeah, another great first date movie.
Yes, thank you. That is our theme today, first date movies. Yes. I'll get to that in a minute. But shifting gears a little bit, and sometimes you just go to the mailbox and you see what's in there, and I'm happy to say I want to thank / blame MVD and the Rewind Collection, because now, ladies and gentlemen, available on Blu-ray... Because I experienced it, I revisited it actually, 1977's Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Yes. No.
You've not heard of this, Sophia?
Oh, I have.
You have, yes. This exists.
Well, there was a cartoon of it too, wasn't there?
Well, there was a sequel.
There's a song.
Well, there is a song. Oh, you mean, hold on. Do you mean.
I know the song.
Do you mean this song?
I do.
You said you'll sing along?
Attack of the Killer Tomato.
Oh, yeah. Attack of the Killer Tomato. Oh, yeah, classic. Man.
And finish you off for dinner or lunch.
Yeah, that's from 1978. Directed by John DiBello. This was, as a fan of bad cinema, she giggles. I love it. This was one it was often heard about. And then when we had video stores in my lovely hometown of Flint, Michigan, it was out, and I rented it, and it was everything you hoped it would be. It's a spoof, of course, of the attack of fill in the blank genre. That were in drive-ins and
attack
movie houses back in the 40s and the 50s. Yeah, somewhere. I'll have to find it, but little backstory. When I was on the air on Sundays, we had a show. The Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra would have a show, and then Stephen Stolen's old program, Opera Matinee, would be at 7:30. So sometimes, and the IS show varied in its length. Sometimes it would be 50 minutes. Sometimes it would be an hour and 20 minutes. I had to fill the remaining time with music. And what became a signature was I would pick out film scores and add whatever, you know, whether it was Hitchcock or Ennio Morricone or John Williams. So that became my bit. Well, at that time in the 90s, Eric Kunzel and the Cincinnati Pops Orchestra and the Cincinnati Orchestra, they did a number of performances and recordings of movie music, TV music, you know, all Star Wars or all Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And there is somewhere in their group, because I played it, I think, for Halloween, but there was a choir singing Attack of the Killer Tomatoes and the theme from the sequel, Beware the Blob, from the early 70s.
I have to
find this.
You have to find this.
But yeah, this
a
is actually
choir?
A thing. So a choir.
How do you not have that one loaded up and
Come
ready
on.
To go?
I was distracted by the Blu-ray. I don't know. but yeah, I'll work on it. And if I don't have it tonight, I'll have it for next week's show. But yes, ladies and gentlemen, your pledge dollars at work. But okay, so how bad is Attack of the Killer Tomatoes? First off, what do you expect with that title? You're not going in expecting a Bergman or a Fellini film or even Titus Andronicus, for all we know. It's not Shakespeare. It's Attack of the Killer Damn Tomatoes. It is, if you've ever seen Kentucky Fried Movie, do you know Kentucky Fried Movie?
I do not.
Okay, it's an R-rated sketch film done by the guys who created Airplane 5 years before Airplane. And there's some familiar faces in it, but there's, you know, kind of commercials and little sketches. But the big chunk of the film is a 20 or 30 minute short called A Fistful of Yen, which was a takeoff of Enter the Dragon. So Attack of the Killer Tomatoes feels like a Kentucky Fried Movie sketch. It's except it's 87 minutes long, I have a grindhouse rule. A lot of films would be better if they were only 70 minutes long. I think Attack of the Killer Tomatoes would be fabulous at 70 minutes long, but It's just a little long, and it's that kind of lowbrow humor and lowbrow productions. You know, it is what it is,
right,
and I enjoyed it. If you have a few cocktails and you and not Bloody Marys, but yeah, I mean this is it, you know, you ask for it and you get it, so you'll have to look
what
for that.
Gift.
Exactly.
I
so yes, thank you MVD for that.
Let me just say, I'm still quite stirred by Sophia's beautiful rendition of Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
It's on your resume, right?
It's
special skills.
I'm moved.
I need to find that choral piece, and I'll.
You should audition for that. A little Sondheim and Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
It's all in my book.
They'll never see it coming.
They.
Hi, Janet. All right, she knows. All right, I swear we'll get to R&J. We will. But there's something I wanted to ask you guys, because this was, and I talked about this on on my Facebook page last week, but the AV Club, the Entertainment Writing section of The Onion, every Friday they have a thing called AV Q&A, where they ask the staff a particular pop culture question. So I want to ask this with you guys. Their question is, and I'll read some of, and I posted it on my page, and I'll read some of the answers. What's the silliest time your parents banned a piece of pop culture from you? And while you're thinking about that, I'm going to go to a couple of suggestions on my page, and I'm going to try to stick to film because there's a lot here. My mom. Oh, this is from Julia in Indianapolis. My mom slapped her hand over my eyes in the movie theater during the sex scene in Purple Rain. 1984, I was there. I was not there for that, Julia, but yeah, I understand that. Ashley from Indianapolis writes, under the age of 10, I was only allowed to watch the audition ending of Flashdance.
What?
And she taped Grease off the TV, and it wasn't until college that I knew I was missing a song. Oh, boy. Yeah. Yeah, I think parents should not so much explain what she does in Flashdance, but how she finds an apartment that big when you're welding and dancing.
Right?
Paul from Chicago. I wanted to watch Porky's, but my mom wasn't having it. It turned out to be good advice. Okay. Paul's mom. I know. Gretchen writes, I was about 9 when the movie Grease came out, and my parents deemed it too inappropriate for me to see. All those 35-year-old high school students. And
it's how upsetting. Do you explain that?
Soccer Channing got held back a lot.
Oh, no.
And John Travolta, I didn't forget. Okay, I have to keep scrolling down. So anything come to mind with you guys?
Yeah, I think The Simpsons is a pretty typical one.
Yes, do you remember when The Simpsons were going to shake the American foundation as we know it? They were a threat to society. Meanwhile, Mike Judge and Trey Parker and Matt Stone are laughing their tushes off.
Yes.
Look at us now.
Yeah.
I really wanted to see True Lies, and my dad went and saw that before me. And I got to see it, but I had to put a hand over my eyes.
Oh, when the Jamie Lee Curtis scene?
Jamie Lee Curtis dancing in a bra.
Blowing up the bridges and blowing up people with missiles is fine, but that's yeah.
That's our puritanical society.
Oh, it really is. I see my parents. Either I got away with hiding the fact that I had seen all the movies and TV shows that they didn't want me to see, but one thing that I'm still a little bitter about is when the third... Episode 3, not the third Star Wars movie, but Episode 3
Thank
of
you.
Star Wars. Oh, there's a difference.
Oh, you mean Shakespeare? You mean Star Wars is Othello?
Oh, God.
And then he drops to his knee and screams no. Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, essentially.
Right.
When that came out, my little brother, huge, we were all big old Star Wars, Lord of the Rings fans, loved anything.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, hold on. Lord of the Rings is still ending.
It's they're working on it.
Yeah, I know.
My brother was in kindergarten, so 5 years old. My dad pulls him from school to go take him to see the PG-13 Star Wars film, whereas I'm in high school and still not allowed to watch Juno.
Oh. You weren't allowed to watch Juno?
I was not allowed to see Juno.
Because you would be inspired to get pregnant and give it to Jason Bateman?
Apparently.
Her parents actually
and Jennifer Garner,
really
yeah.
don't like Orange Tic Tacs was the biggest problem.
Yeah.
Honest
think.
To blog,
and, yeah.
my 16-year-old daughter who loves Juno,
Juno,
she I think she's begging me to be J.K. Simmons as a dad. And I
really?
Say, well, don't screw up. So, and you know, I won't. Anyway, hopefully not.
I want to say for the record, my parents are great parents. You know, parents are doing the best they can
under whatever conditions.
But they did
they
take me
the
to see Arachnophobia in the theaters as a child,
which scarred you for life.
I'm still not okay.
Okay,
you know, to this day, I'm not okay.
We know that. But
see, no Camp, for him.
Cameron writes, this was somebody that from the AV Club wrote this. I find the idea that anyone would be prevented from seeing Moulin Rouge deeply depressing. Let's see. I wasn't allowed to watch R-rated movies until Mom finally let me watch Interview with a Vampire once it came out on video. Truth that be told, I was more likely to police myself on content. God, that's not the best first R-rated movie. Okay.
But Mom wanted to watch it.
Sure.
I think there are reasons to that.
Rocky Horror Picture Show was not allowed in the house. Well, back then you went to the movies, but I think this is after it came out on video. Kate from Richmond. My best friend and I weren't allowed to see Titanic.
Uh-oh.
Her parents were divorced, and her father bought her the two VHS box set. It wasn't a box set. It was two tapes for Christmas. My mom took it away and hid it in her room, which is also had a small TV with a built-in VHS player. My friend and I would go to her house after school, retrieve the VHS, and watch it in 15-minute segments on her mom's TV before she got home from work. This is guys with Playboy reconnaissance 15 work.
15 minutes. That must have taken them years to watch.
That's it's like one zine of Billy Zane preening, and then that's it. The Grease soundtrack, sure. That's something else.
My mother had always banned things or forbidden them, and then we'd come home and she'd be watching them and be like, sit down on the couch.
Right.
And she had forgotten that she told us we couldn't watch these things.
Well, let's see. Leah writes, I was 15 and my parents wouldn't let me see Malcolm X in the theater. So I got books about Malcolm from the library and saw the film a year later when it was on rent. A few years later, I almost worked for Spike Lee but moved to California instead, where I met my husband who shares his birthday with Malcolm.
Wow.
Oh, that's nice. Leah's story there, Leah.
That's a beautiful story.
And
look at you, not being able to watch a film and going and reading a book.
I wasn't allowed to watch... Oh, this is T-Metz in Richmond. I wasn't allowed to watch The Graduate.
Uh-oh.
Oh, and Monty Python, because, you know, those British people and their loose morals.
They're irreverent.
They are irreverent. Gosh, this is really good. I never had this problem, fortunately. I think my dad didn't want to watch kid movies, so I would see stuff with him. So he would try to explain to me as best you could Casablanca, The Godfather, that sort of thing. And our daughter, who is 16, saw her mother do Hamlet at IRT and saw her do King Lear when she was 7. So, things like that. With Hamlet, we watched Kenneth Branagh's version. We skipped through a lot. We got through it in like 2.5 hours. And, anytime there was Julie Christie, Emma would go, Mommy. And we're like, well, not because my wife is the hottest Gertrude ever. And then we go to see it. And, of course, Robert Neal was her Claudius, or as we still call Robert King Hubby.
Oh,
and the only thing that Emma said was instead of a pearl, it was an extract bottle. So when he pours it into the goblet, Emma leaned over age 6. Daddy, that's the pearl. Yeah, I got it, honey. It's fine. It's going to be all right. So
she was keeping you in the loop.
Yeah, I appreciate it. At least, we trained her as an audience, to be a member of the audience. So she knows to sit and be quiet. Otherwise, she would probably scream, Mommy, don't drink it. It's poison.
Well, that's greatly appreciated.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's fun. That was a fun little thing. But yeah, the only play... We didn't really ban her, but the only play Emma has never watched of ours is when my wife directed Lysistrata.
Mm.
She was 11...
That's a tough call. She
heard that there was armor involved, and she's like, I'm not seeing that. I got to play Benedict, and I got to do Titus Andronicus. I got to play Saturninus.
Wonderful.
And if you know Titus, is rape and dismemberment and cannibalism, but the most disgusting thing, according to my daughter, was me kissing Tamara.
Oh, no.
And it was the same woman who played my Beatrice, and it's like, Emma's looking, he's like, I don't even watch you and Mom kissing, let alone this. So,
no.
But yeah, that's the gross stuff that I've inflicted upon my daughter. And Manos the Hands of Fate. All right. Aaron and Sophia are hanging out with me. This has been fun. It's now time to get to the work portion of the show. They are in IRT's production of Romeo and Juliet, which runs through March 3rd. So I guess, Aaron and Sophia, I want to ask you first, tell me your history with William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. What was your first experience with R&J ever?
Oh, first ever.
Yeah.
Well, my first time doing R&J was back in the sixth grade. It was our sixth grade production of Romeo and Juliet, and I, you know, it was my star turn as Romeo, I'm sure. And I was desperately...
So you just dust off your old notes from back then.
Oh, yeah.
Turn here. Oh, kiss here.
You know, just exact same stuff.
But you didn't kiss, did you?
No, I was desperately in love with my Juliet and had been for years.
Did she know?
She did know. I wrote her just a fawning note one summer. It was something to the... I'll protect her name, you know, so she can live.
Raquel.
I'll call her Raquel. Raquel, you are the smartest, nicest, prettiest girl I've ever met, and I like you.
Did you do this before or after the production?
That was long before the production.
Oh,
so
God.
I had years of
pining.
Just pining to practice with. But I was so in love with her that I could not make eye contact unless we were on stage, and then it was like, okay, we're professionals here. We can manage.
Professional sixth graders.
Professional sixth graders, and there was no kissing. I'm not sure if we even physically made any sort of contact whatsoever.
Suggestible handshake.
I mean, it was a beautiful handshake, I'm sure.
Peace sign from across the stage.
Fist bump. Whoa, contact.
Whoa,
hey.
Look out. But that was my first exposure. I mean, I, you know, saw the Zeffirelli film growing up.
Okay. There's also a cover the eyes moment there. So Sophia, does he make eye contact with you?
Most of the time.
Okay, he's gotten over it. Good. Okay.
Most of the time. On stage, absolutely. In person, we're getting closer every day.
It's debatable, you know? Doing the best I can.
We all are. How about you, Sophia?
Well, my first experience with Romeo and Juliet that I can remember, my mother is an English teacher, and so she made sure we were aware of all of the great literature. So my first experience is
a lot of pop-up books and
pop-up books,
Boston for
easy
kids,
easy to understand, easy to read, but with a Shakespeare-esque or Romeo and Juliet esque experience was the 1961 West Side Story, essentially.
Now being remade by Spielberg, apparently.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
But that was my Romeo and Juliet, being able to, the singing and the dancing and the fact that they were Latino, which was really, really something very important to me. And that was my first initial experience with any sort of Romeo and Juliet star-crossed lover situation.
Okay. So I guess this is your second time playing Romeo, or now that we're keeping count here.
Well, I have done Romeo and Juliet twice since I've, you know, I've graduated sixth grade. I did it the first year of my grad school in Detroit, where I played Romeo, and have done it once since, where I was Friar Lawrence, where the concept was that Romeo and Friar were contemporaries and had grown-up friends, which was a great deal of fun. But
one could get a date, the other could make herbs.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, Sophia?
I actually understudied Juliet at Chicago Shakespeare Theater's Romeo and Juliet this past summer during their Short Shakes program, which was a wonderful experience. We went around to the parks and just performed live theater for all of... Chicago.
So putting aside your sixth grade debut, which sounds fabu, I say, how is the approach to this character different from the last time you guys had to play these characters or prepare for this character?
Well, understudying is an interesting task because it's not your own track. I would study the actress I was understudying, Emma. She was amazing. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience to work with her and in the scene. So I came to understand Juliet through someone else's experience, which was interesting. Of course, the poetry and the beautiful, brilliant writing still lands on you and moves you as a storyteller and an actor. But it wasn't never felt entirely my own, and it shouldn't have been.
Right, because that's it's the understudy's job.
It was the job. So taking on this task was really interesting because I had already known the words and had said them and spoken them, but I to apply my own experience with love and life and loss to this production was a really beautiful experience as a whole. I mean, we had Romeo. My Romeo was wonderful. Aaron was fantastic. Henry, our director, was really, really helpful in helping us sort of guide us to the story that we're telling.
Mm-hmm. Aaron?
Yeah, I think for our production, it's a 93-94 minute runtime, no intermission, and it's set contemporary, but I think people have a lot of questions.
There's
about
like
that.
I think if I remember, like mixed time or mixed elements, because the costumes look great mm-hmm. and it looks like it's a different era. But I'm sorry, but
oh no, not at all. So it's set modern day, but I think people hear that and they think, oh, so they're sort of throwing away the language. And you know, that wasn't the case at all. That, you know, as Sophia was saying, Henry, our director, is sort of a Shakespeare master, not only as a director, but as an actor. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of approaching it, our production is a very physical, it's sort of shot out of a cannon. And so I think...
Almost literally.
Almost literally. Yeah. So I think in having that... It really had us really focusing on, you know, what elements of the story have we kept? What is the arc of our story? Mm-hmm. And, you know, looking at the lives of these young people in this societal failure to support them finding love for the first time. Those are things that definitely resonate with all of us, I think. Mm-hmm. So in getting to engage it in that way, it's been a really wonderful experience and challenge.
I think what's fun with Shakespeare and other historical plays is that it's, you know, the reason why we're still watching them, still doing them, is that it's characters and behavioral elements and plots that are still going on today.
William Shakespeare was a master in understanding yep. humanity and the understanding the human condition.
And setting the last time I remember seeing the last production that IRT did, which was set in the 50s, and of course Robert and mm-hmm. Ryan were a part of that. So you can take it and set it in the 50s, or West Side Story, or Verona Beach if you're a Baz Luhrmann
sure.
fan,
yeah.
or there's of course the famous, I think it's the 1940s film version with the 50-year-old Romeo and the 40-year-old Juliet.
Yes.
And you know, that's why the Zeffirelli one was a big deal, because you actually had kids with a one in their age playing the roles for once.
Yeah, and that's an interesting concept. I've spoken with a lot of our local actors and reoccurring actors at IRT, and they talk about how, you know, by the time you're old enough to really understand what Romeo and Juliet are going through, it's a little too late to play the parts yourself. So that's been a challenge, is rediscovering innocence within mm-hmm. our roles.
So, and I mean, your first time working together, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how has the process been to develop the chemistry with you two?
Oh, that's a good question.
That's really why I asked.
Oh, wow.
Again, your pledge dollars at work.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, thank you, pledge dollars.
You're welcome.
Sophia and I, even though Sophia and I are both in Chicago, Sophia's pretty new to Chicago, so we hadn't crossed paths until the audition.
Mm-hmm.
And
we were just talking about this in the car, actually.
Yeah, we were.
Good.
Sort of reminiscing, because it seems like so long ago now. But even in the audition, our director, Henry, who's such a skillful communicator, you know, made sure that we were taking our time and really feeling the weight of the burden that's on these young people trying to hang on to this love. So I felt it's sort of an instant connection with Sophia in terms of just as a human. And I, you know, gave her a ride home.
He did, after the audition.
Yeah, the audition is sort of, it's kind of a jaunt. Claire Simon hosts these auditions, and it's about 40 minutes from the north side. So, mm-hmm. you know, we were the last two there. So I, you know, gave her a ride home, and you know, just got to chat. But it was really nice.
Because you never know when your paths cross again.
For
and
sure.
It's always good to keep things nice.
Yeah.
For sure.
And we talked about all sorts of things. We talked about books and music and fables. Remember the...
What common fables do you guys like? Everybody talks about books and albums. Let's hear the fable stories.
Well, I was saying, the ladybug, fly away home. And she had never heard that, that your house is on fire and your children will burn was the version that I grew up with.
She whipped out the box set of this and put it in the disc player.
She was very disturbed by this. And
I was intrigued. I don't know.
You were disturbed.
Disturbed? I wouldn't say it was.
I had to put the child safety
locks on the
door. I would have jumped
out of the car if I were. Oh, my gosh.
No, she couldn't jump out. But we've spent so much time together in the rehearsals and... It's been really great.
It is. Aaron's a fabulous human and fabulous friend.
Stop
and
it.
He, it's true. He's been such a light in rehearsal process and performance. And the fact that we get to carry this show together has been really, it's really been a great experience overall.
Yeah, and that chemistry is so important. But it's just an ensemble of 10 actors, so which is not a huge cast. Mm-hmm. So. Something that the IRT does so beautifully is that they really foster a sense of family and of it being all about the work and all about the communication with the audience. So, from day one, we've felt supported and loved, and everybody's just...
Everyone's fighting for
the
honesty and the truth, and Aaron has talked about that multiple times, is that... throughout this entire experience, all of us are together fighting for the same truth and the same love story. And I think that will breed chemistry alone.
Hmm. Well, and especially obviously with you two, there's so much that the two characters go through, and it's a lot for you to ask of both of you to go through this. So to be able to bounce off each other and support each other and, being able to talk backstage afterwards, that sort of thing.
For sure.
That comfort and that trust is important.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I saw a few pictures of it, and I know I caught grief from some folks because I saw the masquerade pictures, or as I called it, the Eyes Wide Shut party.
Oh, no. Everyone keeps their clothes on.
I kind of got that, or else you guys wouldn't be here.
Right.
But, Fidelio. those who know Eyes Wide Shut know what I'm talking about. But I saw the mask, and that's immediately where I went to because I'm a dark person. Anyway.
well, it's a dark show, so.
It has its dark moment. And that's the other thing is I think a lot of people, if you ask the first impression of Shakespeare, for a lot of people, the very first title will come up is R&J.
Sure.
But, yeah, I think – and sometimes, and I think especially popular culture, it is a tragedy. We should kind of never forget that. It is a love story, yes, but, again, spoiler alert on, 400-year-old play. Doesn't end well.
What? What do you mean?
Shh. It's okay.
Oh, okay.
You'll find out later. You'll find out later. It's okay.
Oh, I got nervous there.
No, that's all right. It's okay. But, I remember – I'm going to word this carefully. I saw – may not have been in this town – a disco production of R&J.
Huh.
And
disco.
Yeah. Well, okay, I'm going to be more roller disco production of R&J.
Really?
With the music and the costumes. And there's no dialogue. It was all music and movement.
Weird.
And then the ending happens, and then as a postscript, a screen comes down and you see their hands reuniting together in heaven.
Interesting.
Well, I'm a sucker for the reunion story.
I wish you would have taken my daughter to it instead of me.
Oh,
so
no.
That was
it
a while
sounds
back.
Like a roller ballet.
No.
It kind of was. So anyway, but that's that's a different
version. I'm not great on
version.
Skates, so I'm glad we missed that.
We
version.
Or as I like to call it, Xana don't.
So
I guess and then have you guys already started the student matinees yet or no?
Oh, we have.
You have. And how have those crowds been?
They've been great. How long have we been open now? For a week?
We opened
at the
last
time of
Saturday.
This recording.
At the time
so,
of this
so
recording.
So this past week. So you've already warmed up with the student matinees. Mm-hmm. How have the crowds been? Because sometimes they can whoop it up a bit, especially when there's smooching and other things involved.
Yeah, there's definitely been some of that. Most of all, most of the crowds have been really supportive and in it and there. But some of the kids like to like to let us know that they're the boss of the theater, and we kind of have to fight and say, you know, we're telling the story. You guys just
the theater's
take
built for
a
the
seat.
Sound to go this way.
Right.
Okay, I'll word this carefully. Has a production had to stop to chew out the audience?
No.
Okay, thank God. All right, that's good.
The audience is really
okay. Good.
Been great.
No.
And even their vocal responses are really those of. Mostly have been those of joy and those
okay.
of really enjoying the performance.
I think because they're also you too will be in the psyche of young students' minds. You know, for as far as the image of what a male or a female is going, their goal basically.
Yeah.
I will say that in the IRT production of Hamlet, our buddy Matthew who played Hamlet. This is how far back it was. He got a lot of friend requests from high school girls on his MySpace page, and he took none of those.
We've been dealing with a similar thing.
Really, friend requests
seems
Instagram.
To be
Instagram.
The,
oh,
the new medium.
Yes. Yeah. I'm too old to be on Instagram. You really a lot of fans popping up there.
Oh. Yeah, I mean it's really interesting because I don't think Instagram was around the last time I did Romeo and Juliet. I mean it's been a minute, depending on whether it's a middle school audience or a high school audience, it's really interesting, you know, getting to re-engage the show and sort of mm-hmm. see. You know, what it's going to be per audience. But, I mean, I've been really impressed. We've been having talkbacks afterwards in terms of the depth of the questions.
Yes.
And it's
not been
all...
more than how do you know all those lines?
Exactly.
Why do you like acting?
Exactly.
Right.
So I think that's really heartening to have that opportunity to not only share, Shakespeare and a beautiful story, but to connect with people in the theater and young people. And I think they had told us at a certain point that through the course of the run that something like 8,000 students might get to see this production, which is a really special opportunity. A lot of them are seeing theater for the first time.
Exactly.
Or Shakespeare for the first time.
You're going to be their first, for a lot of students and grown-ups as well, you're going to be their image of R&J.
For sure. And,
wow.
I mean,
yeah.
We definitely feel the responsibility in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to take a deep breath just thinking about it.
No pressure. It's all right.
Oh, it's a beautiful burden to bear.
It
I wouldn't
is.
Even call it a burden.
It's part of the
responsibility.
It's part of the job.
It
it's
is.
A pleasure.
It is a pleasure.
Exactly.
It is a pleasure. It's a gift.
Okay, we got less. Again, Romeo and Juliet runs through IRT, runs at IRT through March 3rd. Go to irtlive.com for ticket information, and you can see Aaron and Sophia and Ryan and Millicent and Connie and Robert. And, yeah,
they're all the best.
Yeah,
they really are.
We've run around circles with them as well. So
they're the best.
They're fun. I guess a little bit. We got about less than 10 minutes left. Do you have a favorite Shakespearean film?
Oh, man.
Shakespearean film.
That's hard. I mean, I really did grow up on the Zeffirelli, Romeo and Juliet.
And we all did because there really wasn't a cinematic Shakespeare revival until the 90s, of which Mr. Lorman was a part of that and others. I think the Zeffirelli one holds up really, really well. Solid performances from everybody across the board. And I think when people think of the traditional sense of the giant pants and, you know, the swords that and the giant plume hats, that's probably the image they have. I think that was my first Shakespeare play as well. I was in high school and we took the bus trip down. I can't remember which theater, the big one in Detroit, mm-hmm. and seeing that and seeing for the guys, it was dudes with swords on stage.
Sure.
That
yeah.
was cool. I want that. I'm going to make that in shop class.
Right.
Don't make that in shop class.
Just don't take that home.
No.
I can't remember when exactly it came out, but the Hamlet that had Helena Bonham Carter playing the role of Ophelia.
That's the one with Mel Gibson.
Yes,
yeah,
the
Mel
one
Gibson.
With Mel Gibson.
And Glenn Close, who was apparently mm-hmm, mm-hmm. 5 when she had her son Hamlet. So.
Right.
Oh, God.
The famous story was Glenn Close said, I got a call from her. She got a call from her agent, said, I got good news and I got bad news. They want you. Mel Gibson wants you to be in Hamlet, and he wants you to be his mother.
Oh, well. Okay. I mean, Glenn Close can do just about anything,
and she has. That's pretty good there. So.
Yeah, and sort of like you were saying, we're sort of in a golden age of Shakespearean cinematic revivals, and it's really sort of exciting.
And the fact that we can get. And you, obviously, the obvious titles, the obvious ones like Hamlet and Romeo and Juliet, and there's been a couple different Hamlets and offsets, but the fact that, you know, Julie Taymor can do Titus,
sure,
and Ralph Fiennes will direct and appear in a film version of Coriolanus, which we never thought, you know, who would have thought?
Right.
But yeah, that the 90s with that, and speaking of Helen Bonham, 12th Night that Trevor Nunn did. And Kenneth Branagh getting to do As You Like It, getting to do Love's Labor's Lost as a 40s Cole Porter musical. I think the editing in that film makes up for the lack of editing in Hamlet, because he did the whole thing. But those, the fact that it can go anywhere and be set in any time, that's why I think, again, that's why we do Shakespeare. That's why I think, you know, PBS and Masterpiece Theater and others, you know, the BBC, every 10 years there is a new version of this or that. PBS, of course, has a new version of Little Women that's going to be coming up on TV soon.
Wow.
So
these stories are universal. These experiences are not unfamiliar to the human experience in general. And we've talked several times about how, you know, different actors will come back to these characters and these roles to revive them and get closer and closer to the role. So it's no different with cinema, you know, trying to create a new work based around the same universal idea.
Right. And in a case, and especially in about 20 years, gang, you can be a friar and nurse.
Hey, Friar Part 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, so, I'd see that.
I know.
Oh, that Much Ado, Kenneth.
Yeah.
I love that one.
Well, it's funny because after I did it at the Richmond Shakespeare Festival, and that's a film I remember. I just graduated college when it came out, and a bunch of us from theater kids from Ball State watched it and loved it. And then what is customary for me, it's a tradition for me, is like once a show is done, I watch a film version of it. And I had watched Branagh's Much Ado probably 20 times, but because I had a journey with it, it's different. It doesn't make the film better or worse. It just makes it different because you've had your own experience with this story.
And you've got Keanu Reeves in it.
Oh, you know? Well, you know, you don't turn that job down, if you are getting massaged in leather pants.
Yes.
But also, have you seen Joss Whedon's version of Much Ado?
Yes.
That's a nice, I would say, I think I would watch that second, but it's a great compare contrast.
It is. It really is.
You know, the other one, you know, Ken's is it sounds like you're spending a summer in Italy, and Joss's, you're doing a weekend in Palm Springs, weekend in Hollywood with friends, and it's like a weekend long cocktail party. You just happen to film it.
Right.
So, we've got about 3 minutes left. Have you guys? I know you're going through the screeners. Have you been able to watch anything new or recent? Well, and you've been busy, of course.
Oh, the Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
My number one film of last year.
It eviscerated me in all the best ways. Frances McDormand can
a force of nature.
She is a force of nature, and it was my favorite movie of the year too. It was just I've watched it a couple of times now because it really moved me.
I saw Lady Bird, which
now my number two film.
That was so fantastic. I mean, talk about a universal story of. It wasn't necessarily even growing up or a coming of age story, but it was a story about discovering human identity and what it is that defines you.
And moms and daughters and
moms and daughters. Oof.
Yeah.
It hit home and
it did.
And too many familiar
ways. And it'll hit home differently in about 20 years, 30 years probably. Hopefully not. I mean, you know what I mean. It's also a cautionary to, you know, the 16-year-old absolutely loved it. I'm bawling like a baby with Laurie Metcalf in the car at the airport.
That was
some really spectacular Chicago actors to plug Chicago actors for a second.
Steppenwolf represent.
Oh, I mean, Steppenwolf was all over the place, and man, it was beautiful.
Yep. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, there's plenty out there. Yes, all the Oscar stuff is still going to be there because the Academy Awards are the same day as you guys close, I believe.
Ooh.
So
party.
You well. get out of there fast. So, but yeah, again, Romeo and Juliet, it's a 90-minute version, am I hearing? 90-so minutes, yeah. So no intermission.
No, it flies.
It flies. So go to irtlive.com for information. It runs through March 3rd. Aaron and Sophia, thank you so much for hanging out.
Oh, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for having us.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by. Soylent Green is people. Zardoz has spoken.
Zardoz.
You know Zardoz?
I do.
Yeah, okay, we're going to talk later. Points. Unless you want to look at Sean Connery in a loincloth.
I'm a fan of Sean Connery.
1970s Sean Connery.
Oh, right. He was trying to break the James Bond mold.
And that was it. You know who turned that film down?
Everybody.
Burt Reynolds.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Burt would have been perfect. He would have been perfect.
Him and that mustache.
Sean, too. All right, anyways, go see a good movie. You deserve it, and go check out R&J. Hi, everybody. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!